Hello, this is The Link Show. We're going to get started in just a couple minutes here. In the meantime, if you have IRC access, be sure to join us at irc.thelinuxshow.com and channel pound Linux Show. So hang in there. We'll get started right after these messages.
You're listening to The Linux Show. Or maybe you're thinking about it. I don't know. This is probably a commercial. You want to find out about Linux and open source? Check us out at www.linuxshow.com for the best in Linux community news. Check us out.
And we're back. This is the Tuesday night edition of the Linux Show for Tuesday, November 12th, 2002. Broadcasting live from Aurora for two more weeks. And then we'll get back to the new broadcast center in Geneva. Of course, our main server is in Chicago, Illinois, home of the Blues. But anyway, we got the whole cast together here tonight. How's everybody doing?
Pretty good.
Hanging in.
I'm okay, I think.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey.
So I'm in the process of moving and had to make the painful choice of whether to stick with Dish TV or go with cable and get either TiVo or Replay TV or try to build my own.
So what did you do?
Well, decided to go with cable. I don't know about the PVR solution. I mean, I've been trying to build my own for years and years, and the problem I've run into is I just have not found a good solution for getting the video back out to the TV. Because I have one video card that has a video out, but because the actual video out conversion is handled by a separate chip, which does not have Linux drivers, you're locked into one screen size, which doesn't really quite fit. Yeah. And I also tried the external VGA to composite video, and that wasn't really satisfactory either. So that's the main stumbling block there.
You didn't like the TV-ator?
No. In fact, I tried that and another one. And while they're both okay, that certainly isn't the quality of the TiVo or Replay TV. You can definitely tell that you've got several layers of filtering in there.
Well, you could write your own driver, you know.
Yeah. Well, that is part of the trick, is you gotta get
lazy ass.
Just like everybody else.
Yeah. Well, the real key, instead of waiting until I have this 2 gigahertz chip in my machine, is I could have done it, you know, many generations of CPUs ago, if I could have just gotten a hardware MPEG-2 encoder. And obviously, since things like TiVo and Replay TV are out cheap, that there are cheap chips out there, but no one's making PCI cards for them with drivers available.
Yep. Let me just jump in here one second and just give everybody a warning. The server that is in Naperville may choke from time to time. The upstream provider we have in Naperville has been having some problems today, so if you're on the Naperville stream, beware. It is possible that you may have some time delays with excessive buffering. But who knows? Maybe it'll be fine. So, okay, back to you, Kevin.
But anyway, to segue into vaguely Linux-related news, TiVo and Replay TV have settled their lawsuits against each other, presumably so they can go on and fight Microsoft and other enemies of the world, or just to keep from running out of money, which certainly sounds to be a concern with both of them.
Indeed.
So, what other interesting stories are out there? Anyone want to jump in?
Russell, so you had one.
Yeah, I have my rant of the week coming here. I guess we can start.
Go ahead. We'd like to hear that one, Russ.
I'm in on this one, okay?
Yeah, this is a wonderful one.
I'm in on this big time, so go ahead, Russ.
Yeah, on the if you look at the Linux Show webpage, you'll notice a list of links for India and Gates, as it's been put. If you take a look at the first link there, the one for Business World India, there's a nice little article, and I ran across this I guess it's been about 2 or 3 days ago now. And it was a nice little article talking about how India is moving into the way of things Linux and things open source. And it was one of those really encouraging little pieces. You know, it's not any great detail, no mysteries revealed, but it's rather clear that the value proposition for Linux and open source is being appreciated by both parts of the Indian government and the Indian people. And I was really glad to see this because anyone in the industry can tell you that there's an awful lot of talent coming out of India these days. So, you know, it's really good to see that that Linux is catching on there. And I was working at my keyboard, I think, either last night or the night before, and I had one of the cable news stations on in the background. And I hear this glowing report on how Bill Gates has donated $100 million to fight AIDS in India. I almost barfed on my keyboard. And, you know, I was kind of taken aback by it all. And at first I was thinking to myself, you know, maybe you're just being cynical here. You know, maybe this is just a genuinely good act this man is trying to do, and that it's somewhat coincidental that at a time when they're talking about how India is going with Linux, that he decides to give $100 million to AIDS research in India. But then, of course, I see the follow up that he's giving $400 million to further education on computers in India, and going to the children, going to a number of other different places. And, you know, the thought that has really come to my mind regarding this, there's a few of them, but one of the first thoughts that came to me was, I've heard of a few of the donations from his charitable foundation, and it seems to me that everyone that I've heard of has been associated with some other Microsoft activity. And it really is beginning to irk me more than slightly that that his charity seems to be lockstep with the corporation. But the other take on this that I have is that you know, here we are with a company that has been convicted of monopolistic activity. And
illegal monopolistic activity.
Excuse me?
Illegal monopolistic
That's
activity.
It. And the only way that we can break the monopoly is to basically change the market, so the areas where they are reaping their benefits will suddenly become non-profit centers, both in operating systems and office software. Changing the nature of the market is the only way to knock them down, since obviously the government isn't going to do anything about it. And so here we see this very rich company basically trying to stop the market from changing. It's as if the world's largest buggy whip manufacturer is now opening classes in across India, trying to teach them better uses of buggy whips and why buggy whips are good. You know, I mean, it's like giving lessons in telling people how to shout "get a horse" every time the new paradigm rolls by. It just amazes me that we're seeing this. It is probably the only strategy, quite frankly, based on the latest Halloween paper that came out. It's probably the only strategy that has any chance at all of working, short of them actually doing something to change their model. But it really just it just set me off really bad seeing this come down. I know, Jeff, you had some comments on that.
Yeah, I have a couple of observations because I've been following the story all weekend long since it actually the first couple stories on it broke. At a reception that Gates was at last Friday evening. And so it was starting to trickle out into the media on Saturday. First of all, let's let's put this in the proper perspective. Number one, two and a half weeks ago, the case was settled, and the decision of the case was basically Microsoft's proposition to the Department of Justice saying, "Yep, you're right. We're guilty. We're sorry. We'll never do it again. Here, slap my hand, and I promise I will never do it again." And so that was a scant 2.5 weeks ago. And here we have, 2.5 weeks later, Bill Gates testing the water of using monies that were generated by an illegal monopoly. It's not, you know, my opinion stating that. It was, you know, there's over 40 counts that went against Microsoft in the finding of facts. So they are, in fact, in legal fact, guilty of felony monopolistic practices. So
I don't think it's felony because it's this is not a criminal matter. It's a civil matter, and I don't think
it's well, it may be, you know, it may be felony depending upon how much weight the actual documents took in to the to those findings of fact. We'll never really know because there was no real punishment, Arnie, ever.
Oh, and we know that.
Okay.
You know, and about this India thing, I think that, you know, how much money are they putting in there, Russ?
Well, hold, it's $400 million.
Well, that's probably enough for, that's probably enough to pump a substantial amount of thorazine and sodium pentothal into the water supply there to keep smooth things over so that they don't notice
well,
that there's
hold
things
sitting back over. Back it up, okay? Because let's, again, we got to preface this in the proper position. Bill Gates never talked to anybody in India about these donations. These came out of his own doing, his own press office. He never went out and got the cooperation ahead of time of the Indian medical authorities. Because the fact of the matter is India is royally pissed at Bill Gates today.
Well,
really?
They can line up with, what's that, his South American outfit and the Africans.
Okay, the reason being is the Indian culture is very, very sensitive about sexual issues. Okay, in their culture, you don't talk about sex in public. You just don't. And so for him to be waving a banner, "Here I am, Bill Gates, I'm going to save you all from AIDS," has infuriated the sensibilities of the Indian government. They are royally pissed at him. Now, they haven't said no, they're not going to take his money, but they are very unhappy with the way he has gone about doing this, of him stepping forward into the press as if he is some kind of savior. They're very, very disturbed by this. And so today, Gates had to back off and apologize. This has not gotten into the press yet about him having to back up on this, but they're really mad at him.
Where did you hear about this, may I ask?
NPR.
Uh-huh.
Okay, my source is NPR. Being as that is a fairly liberal radio station, I think I can count on that being accurate.
Sure.
Second of all, there's no question that the $400 million being offered to the school systems, particularly the higher education systems, is nothing less than a bribe.
Yep.
Absolutely nothing less than a bribe. And it is identical to the bribe offered to Peru. And so here we go. Microsoft is testing the water. Will the federal government come down on them now for this kind of a monopolistic activity if it is outside of the U.S. I think they're going to find that the Department of Justice is not going to bother.
Oh, there's zero chance.
Pardon?
There's zero chance of that.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
It's just because it's outside the country, they're not going to lift a finger. It would be so difficult for the Department of Justice to do anything about it. I just cannot envision anything happening. So I think really the only recourse that we as a community have is to, again, take this kind of evidence, compile it all together, and I've seen a lot of people on the IRC saying that, you know, well, we're doomed because the Republicans are now in charge and Microsoft is, you know, going to be incapable of doing anything wrong in the eyes of the Republicans. And frankly, I think people are just wrong about that. It's our job to go to them and educate them about what's going on. Believe me, Bill Gates is no great hero of Republicans. He has traditionally been a supporter of the Democratic Party, so there's no particular great love or honor that is being bestowed to Bill Gates by the Republican Party by any.
You mean other than the fact that they slapped his wrist and let him go free?
Now, that wasn't, Arnie, you're not being totally fair. The judge who did that was appointed while Clinton was still in office.
But see, they also have to go by the you know, when the Department of Justice basically pulls out of the case, there's not much left to do, is there?
Yeah, but the judge was still independent, Arnie. And
being
fair, Arnie, she was appointed by Clinton.
I don't care who's appointed by her. When the Department of Justice pulls out of the case, there's not much she can do.
Yeah. Well, she could have thrown out the settlement if she chose. But because the sentiment in Washington...
I think she was receiving plenty of pressure not to do that.
Well, no, Arnie, I think the sentiment in Washington, D.C. is we have 9/11-type issues to worry about, and this is just, you know, inconsequential in the big picture.
Mm.
And I think you're seeing a lot of things that are being thrown aside in the courts because they're being viewed as non-essential in the big picture of things right now. I mean, they just don't have enough judges right now to deal with a lot of stuff. And so that's a, you know, that aside, though, we have to be diligent on these issues, catalog them, and present this information to people in Washington because this is a blatant attempt to buy a market. Nothing less than a blatant attempt.
They tried that in South America, they tried it in Africa, and they received the same kind of treatment in both places. Let's hope the Indians...
No, it worked in Peru.
No.
Did Peru chase them out? No. Peru welcomed them with open arms.
And one issue that occurred to me, and I haven't really seen anyone bring up yet, is that I know a lot of people were saying when the dot-com economy fell apart that one of the problems was a lot of IT jobs being outsourced to India, among a lot of places, and I'm wondering if this could be seen as Microsoft inadvertently or vertently promoting IT jobs moving from the U.S. to another country and backfire on that respect.
Well, it's an interesting concept, actually, and I think that inside some respect, since they know that there's a reality there, they want to make sure that if there's outsourcing to be done, it's going to be outsourcing on their playing field. It's going to be Microsoft programmers from India. That's an interesting, you know, it's an interesting notion. I think that that's part of the whole game plan. I mean, when you think about it, the number of or the amount of talent that is being developed in India right now,
China.
Yeah, China is sort of like the next great frontier. The thing is, China, though, has been largely keeping to themselves. India has been exporting. In fact, even, jeepers, even as long as, like 8-9 years ago, when I was still working with Digital Equipment Corporation, now long gone, I can remember even then that, we would sometimes, outsource certain tasks to Indian groups that we had partnerships with. And I think we're going to be seeing a lot more of that. And so it's all the more important to Microsoft to see that those are Indian Windows programmers. Frankly, I don't think, since Microsoft isn't surviving on their service end of their business, they don't care who's doing the work as long as they're doing it on their platform. And I think that's what we're seeing right now.
Yep.
I mean, this is you know, what we're seeing also in the press and what I've seen the last couple of weeks since this thing first hit the news wire is that the places where this is going to be challenged the most strong is the European markets, where the Europeans are not real happy with the slap of the wrist, and this is one place where Linux is quite strong.
I do have a good result of this event. Okay, there's a bright side. There's always a bright side to things, and that bright side is that people within the open source community are starting to come out of their shell. Hell, Kevin, you've done more talking tonight than I think you've done in the last year. Congratulations.
But, thank you.
But people within open source are starting to come out of the shadows, and today was evidence to that. I was in the car driving to Radio Shack trying to catch a weather report, so I flipped over to WGN Radio. WGN Radio is one of the oldest radio stations in Chicago, and it's primary...
One of the oldest in the world.
Yeah.
World's greatest newspaper.
Well, in theory.
Yeah. Well, I didn't use this
answer. Yeah. But the Tribune Company, which runs WGN, is primarily targeted towards, I would say, your 35 to 60 demographics. It has traffic like every 10 minutes, things like that. And so I wanted to catch weather, and so I flipped over to WGN Radio. Okay? This radio station during drive time, which is when I was driving, is probably listened to by a million people easy in the Chicago market. And what happens to come on is the news personality is talking about this donation of the $400 million to the schools and the $100 million to the hospital system in India, and what a great man Bill Gates is. And he goes on and on and on and on at length. And what happens? Their switchboard lights up. Their switchboard lit up to the point where they had to ask Linux fans to please stop calling.
Melted them. It's called the flash dot effect.
You bet. But they actually let a couple calls through, and these people, they did their best. They probably weren't as studied as some of us are, because we've been following the issue all weekend, but they did a pretty good job in highlighting the fact that, hey, look, Bill Gates is guilty of monopoly, and the government let him off, and here he is 2 weeks later. He's right back at it. He's trying to buy a country with illegally obtained money. Now, that money may presently be residing in his foundation, but prior to being in his foundation, that money was generated by profit from Microsoft Corporation. And so it is ill-gotten gain. And here he is trying to buy a country with ill-gotten gain.
I want to clarify again, the Linux show, we at the Linux show really do understand that it's not illegal to have a monopoly in the United States. It's not illegal. We understand that. But it is illegal to use one's monopoly as leverage to get another monopoly, which is exactly what Microsoft has been held guilty of.
That's correct.
So when we say monopoly, we really technically mean illegal monopoly.
Yes. Well, the ill-gotten gain.
Yeah.
Or the ill use of the gain is what the illegal act is. And so I was so proud. Here I was. I was driving as fast as I could to get home, to get on the phone, to call them up and scream at them, are you guys clueless about Bill Gates? He's the damn Antichrist. That's what I wanted to say. But you know what? Enough people called and did it for me. So it's starting to happen. We're starting to get heard. A million people this afternoon heard the words, Bill Gates is a monopolist. He was found guilty, and he is using his money illegally. And a million people today heard that on the radio. So that's good news.
Yeah.
Story's getting out. little by little.
Yep.
So maybe there's a good side to this.
Yep, well, we should probably move along to the next topic. Doc, you have a story of the week?
I have several little items. One of them isn't up yet, so I can't really point to it. It's a fairly trivial thing about Cafe Linux. A friend of mine wrote in pointing out that in the Akihabara, I think it's called, section of Tokyo, which is the downtown electronicsville. I mean, it's where you go for all the gadgets. There's a place called Linux Cafe. And Dave Siffrey, our friend Dave, happens to speak Japanese. He worked in Japan for a long time, and he added a whole bunch of stuff to it, which is he knows the people who are doing it, and it's pretty cool. But he also pointed out that that the Zoras does pretty well over there. But if you actually go right now to Google News and look up Linux, you'll find that 7 hours ago there was an announcement of some new Zoras units. I don't know if this is real news or not, but I thought it was worth pointing out nonetheless. So that's sort of like the palm thing. Another thing is on the Linux Journal site, if you scroll down a little ways, you'll see a piece called Grounds for Identity, which is actually an editorial I wrote, I think, for the December issue, but it ended up on the website. And it's a follow-up on the last, on the coverage I did at the Identity Conference, Digital ID World in Denver early last month. And it talks about the need for an open source project without which all of the efforts being done by Sun's Liberty Alliance and Microsoft's whatever it's called this week, Palindrome, what the hell is that? Palladium. Panopticon is probably more what it's about. Anyway, Palladium are going to be worthless because they will not be the infrastructure underneath it that really is only going to come from geeks doing open source work and adding to the value of the net with some kind of identity services. Anyway, there have been some interesting responses to that, and so I wanted to point to that because that's a project that I really want to see going. And I just got a note from a few minutes ago from Andre Duran saying they are actually making progress with that, and pingid.org is going to turn into sourceid.org pretty soon to get it a little farther away from pingid, which I think is a good thing. I think they learned from the Jabber experience that there was, rather than leverage, there was more confusion between the company and the open source movement. So this time they really want to get those two apart. They still want to support it, but they don't want it to look like it's feeding into the corporate side of what the company's doing. But I happen to think this identity thing is really, really important, and we need to start thinking about it a little bit more publicly. So these are sort of my two items at the moment. If you scroll down a little bit farther, by the way, at the Linux Journal site, I don't know if this scrolled off yet, it's got a whole pile of stuff from the Geek Cruise, which Linus is going to come back and be on this year, by the way, this coming fall, and we're going to go to Alaska.
Okay.
So,
a year from now?
Not quite a year from now. Actually, we moved the schedule up. It's going to be in September instead
okay.
of October. So it'll be in September 13th, and it'll be for a week and out of Vancouver. And it'll go up to, I think, Hubbard Glacier someplace. It's going to take the Inside Passage partway and then go to Sitka and a couple other places. So that's going to be a pretty nice one. It's going to be on the Amsterdam, which is the flagship of the Holland America Line. It's supposedly like their best boat, or at least until their new one comes out. They've got another one coming along. So that's kind of a fun thing.
Isn't cruising to Alaska in September kind of cold?
Yeah. It might. I don't know. In September it might not be, actually.
I don't know.
We went in June on another one, early June, and that's actually supposed to be rainy. And I think one of the advantages of September is it's not a rainy season. And that's what you want up there. It's not so much an issue about cold, it's an issue about rain. There have been Alaska cruises, I'm told, where you go through the whole thing and you never see the mountains until you park right next to a couple, something like that. So it's and in that time of year, I'm told it's actually pretty risky in the spring. But I think the story with September is that it's a little bit more summery or Indian summery, which is to say you can see things. More likely to see the Northern Lights at that time too than in the summer.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Northern Lights is a pretty good season for it. There's been several very, very, very large solar flares, and
yeah,
and those always result in pretty spectacular displays. See, 4 years ago in Michigan, that was just completely
There were ones, actually, this time of year is very big for those, and there were a couple solar flares last November around this time that caused the Northern Lights to be pushed. Basically, the Northern Lights is a ring over the North Pole, okay, the North Magnetic Pole.
Wrong.
And the North Magnetic Pole is actually just in the north end of Canada. So the Northern Lights kind of move around in a large arc that goes over Alaska and the western provinces in Canada. But what this did was it pushed that ring like a crown on the head of the Earth down over the U.S. And there were clear Northern Lights as far south as San Diego and Texas. So, and North Carolina, with wonderful pictures. You can look them up on the web. Pretty amazing stuff.
Yeah, and it was a pretty good display. And Michigan, of course, has always been a pretty good place to catch the Northern Lights.
Yeah, Michigan's not bad, and Wisconsin and Minnesota, but they moved pretty far south a couple times. It's worth checking out. Definitely worth monitoring that stuff.
Hey, Doc.
Yeah.
There's a story that I'm starting to work on right now for not tonight, but for 2 weeks from tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps you might want to work on it with me. I've been given a copy of Linux in the Workplace to review.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, did you work on this book?
I've had nothing to do with it, but or maybe I haven't. I don't even know. I've had so many things going on.
There's no author attributions in the whole damn thing.
Oh, really? It
just says, from the people of at SSC.
Oh, that's a different thing. Oh, yeah, that, absolutely. I'm not connecting. Yeah, that's one of those things where we were giving away big piles of them on the boat, but I never got one.
I got one.
So I've not seen it.
Great book.
Yeah, I'm sure there's something in there. I should add, by the way, and this would be for the listeners, one of the things that we want, and we're... I'm trying to make as much of a push for it as I possibly can. There is just no information out there from any official source about Linux adoption in the workplace like there used to be when there were big companies funding it. There just isn't. There's not. It's getting thinner and thinner all the time. And yet we know that Linux is moving in massive ways into companies. And we need some hard data about that. So anybody have any statistics whatsoever, let us know. So we're looking for that stuff at all times.
Okay, who's next?
Jeff, you got any news?
I do, but I'm not ready. Go on to somebody else.
Okay, I'll take it.
Ready?
Yeah.
I've got a couple items. In particular, there's one, and this kind of segues with to a topic that Doc was just talking about. And that's Linux seeping into new markets. And there's an article on internet.com. When it's life or death, some 911 systems turn to Linux. And what they're talking about here is basically most of these systems running on Unix, and several of the software manufacturers are saying, but they're not getting a lot of call for Linux. And then I'll read this right from the article. Quote, a few customers, however, are asking specifically for Linux. When the city of Bloomington, Indiana, issued a request for a proposal for a new dispatch system recently, it specified Linux as the underlying operating system. That's because Bloomington has been happily running older dispatch software on Linux since 1999, says Rick Rutan, the manager of the city's user support and operations group. While the existing dispatch system had worked well, the company making it had sold it, and the new owner was not updating the Linux version. In response to its RFP, Bloomington received proposals for dispatch systems on Windows and Unix, says Rutin, but none for Linux. One of the vendors, however, Logistics Systems in Missoula, Montana, which does a lot of its development work on Linux, agreed to port its system to Linux. Bloomington purchased the software and is now in the process of cutting over to the new system. Now, unquote. This is what's happening, that people are finding it easy to port this legacy Unix software over to Linux. And because there's a lot of Unix still, Unix domains out there, business domains, where Unix is used heavily, like in retail and in things like specialty applications like this, where Unix can be, you know, reliable, that Linux is basically seeping into these markets and taking them over, you know, because the money and the reliability is, the, you know, the savings of money and the very high reliability of Linux is able to make it very compelling choice. And it's a very good article. There's another article, and regretfully, it's a registration-only article from eschools.net. And it's a special report on Linux and learning, and this is kind of home, you know, hits home with me because what I'm doing these days is teaching. And one of the things I'm working on is working to incorporate computers more into the school thing. And one thing, Linux is a gimme here because schools have no money, and Linux is certainly a way in to improving the system. What I'm trying to do at my high school is try to get the students involved in building a demonstration network. And then showing it, you know, to certain people in the school district to show what it can do. You know, if the students can do it, maybe they need to get some teachers. But teachers are kind of funny people. There's a lot of Luddites out there in the teacher profession because teachers don't know a lot about computers, and they have a tendency to be very distrustful of them. And a thing like Linux scares the bejesus out of them. It's absolutely astounding. I've never seen anything like it before. You know, like, for instance, you know, our system works pretty good. I mean, over there, and everybody has computers and everything, and it runs real well. But you know, well, there's a lot of legacy in Windows 98, which I actually, if I'm going to run Windows, I'd probably much prefer Windows 98 than certainly an XP or ME, but.
Yeah, most games work quite well with 98.
There's no games on our networks, but you know, we're heavily networked and it all seems to work quite well. I'm not sure what their servers are running there. I haven't really pried too much into it. It might be NetWare. I'm not sure. It might be maybe NetWare, but it's you know, I can see putting a shadow network in there and using it as a demonstration tool, because there's a lot of people interested in the open source community, and a lot of the teachers are interested, who are the technically aware teachers are very interested in it, and but the thing is, the people that make the decisions are total Microsoft, and that's where those are the people you have to sell.
Yeah, there's always the story about people asking why the printer server hasn't crashed lately, and find out it's because it's been running Samba for the last 6 months.
Yeah, that's another thing I'm trying to do is trying to get them to, like, they won't buy everybody printers. And I said, so what? So you don't need to buy everybody printers. Just buy one printer for each building, or one or two printers in each building, and stick an old machine and network it, you know. You know, when people want to print, they can print and go get their printouts. You know, it's, like, easy to do. You know, this is some of the things we're going to be trying to do.
Okay, well, I got my stories ready if you're done.
Go ahead, Jeff.
They're really just a couple of quickies. First one I would like to relate to everybody is some what I consider good news, if you can believe them, and that is that... Our are market leaders, the number two software company in the world, Oracle Corporation, may have done a great service to the entire IT community today by their CEO coming out over the weekend and announcing that the IT recession is over, and that Oracle and most of their partner network has experienced a great upturn in business over the course of the last quarter, quarter and a half, and they are starting to see a market trend that they normally see just prior to the return of good times within IT. And what that is an explosion of people getting trained on Oracle. So people are starting to gear up throughout the channel for more business. The high-priced Oracle-certified administrators and programmers had not been able to maintain their jobs and are long since out of the market doing something else. And so people are now starting to become short-handed. And that is a very good sign for the future when you see companies like Oracle making comments like this. Today on that news, this news was reinforced last night at a dinner held by Oracle. And because that news was reinforced yesterday evening, upon opening of the market today, Oracle's stock shot up $6 a share, and the entire NASDAQ had the largest gain it's had in a long time, 30-point gain. And hopefully this is really good news for all of us, regardless of whether we are open source advocates or not. It would be really nice to see a return to some good solid buying. Hopefully we're going to start seeing that poke up in other areas of our industry as well. But this is definitely a day for good news and celebration that maybe the layoffs are over. I tell you, when I heard today that Cal Labs was actually canceling some layoffs, I didn't believe it at first until I heard that news, that Cal Labs was going to cancel a layoff. Cal Labs, there's not been any good news out of Cal Labs for the last 2.5 years, and that happens to be a company that is the second largest employer in the town I live in. And so that's definitely good news for the town I live in. So I'm hoping for all of us that this is indeed true news. The other story I have, you can find it at CNN.com on their technology report. Just go to CNN.com, click on the technology icon, and it should still be the lead story in the technology section. It was as of early this afternoon. I haven't been there since about noon, 2 o'clock, but it was the lead story. I was posted like 11 o'clock or noon this afternoon. The story is about a renegade programmer is offering a legal DVD copying program. And a guy by the name of Robert Moore has started a business called 321 Studios. And he is a developer and independent seller of DVD copying software. It's going to be very, very interesting to see how this plays out in the greater picture of all of this Hollywood intellectual property hullabaloo. I'm having a hard time understanding why this guy's product is legal, and yet the code that people within the Linux community have developed just to play DVDs is illegal. They both crack the copy protection scheme. And so this is a really interesting story. I'm going to follow up on this, and although I'm not going to be on the show next week, I'll make sure I get all my notes. I'm going to see if I can get a hold of this guy and get him to be lined up as a guest sometime in the next couple of weeks. I'll turn that over to you, Russ.
Okay.
That's all my stories this week.
Okay, well, I guess on that note, we'll take a short break, and we'll be back to talk about Windows Refund. And so hang in there. We'll be right back.
I'd like to take this opportunity to thank the sponsors who make the Linux Show possible. I'd like to thank VA Linux. Oops, no, they're not VA Linux anymore. They are now VA Software. Hope they don't change their name again pretty soon. I'm going to have to make another commercial. But check out VA Software and learn all about the SourceForge development platform for internal company development projects. Or if you're just a little guy but want to get a flavor of it all, check out SourceForge.net and spread the word on open source development platforms.
And we're back. This is the second segment of the Linux Show, and for this segment, we're joined by Adam Kozman of WindowsRefund.net. Welcome, Adam.
Hi.
So, what can you tell us about Windows Refund?
Well, I can tell you that this is a very young site. It actually just went up in September. So, yeah, it's fairly young at the moment. And it was really just born out of my frustration with dealing with Toshiba. I purchased one of their products back in August and just could not believe the battle I had to endure. I don't know if any of you are familiar with the old site that was the Windows Refund Center.
Yes, I am.
And I mean, while the reading was good, it was helpful. I mean, it really did arm me with a lot of what I needed to know when talking to various personnel, you know, up the chain in Toshiba. I mean, I was even dealing with corporate at one time. And it provided me with some good information, but just the fact that the site is no longer maintained, there doesn't seem to be a community that's focused on this issue anymore. I mean, basically there was a lot missing, and I really felt the need to try and, you know, rejuvenate, I guess, this issue, bring it back to life and pump some new blood into it.
So what is the current status on Toshiba's stance on refunding people for Windows?
It's amazing, actually. They actually this was like a learn as you go type thing. I mean, I actually became aware of their stance on this after I had purchased the laptop, even though I tried to be as proactive as possible. I mean, I was on the phone with Shop Toshiba and dealing with people up in corporate before I even had the laptop in my hands. It was after the fact, though, while trying to make my claim and get some kind of support for the refund that I am entitled to. You know, if you go by the words that are written in the end user license agreement, I became aware of something that they call the master end user license agreement. This is something that supposedly supersedes any license agreement, you know, shipped with the product pertaining to Windows. And it actually boils down to this. This is, again, just in the case of Toshiba. Once I rip open the bag that the laptop is has been shipped in, I concede to the terms of this MEULA, this Master End User License Agreement, which basically says I have no rights to claim a refund and this and that. It's my problem with that is that, and I'm sure a lot of companies implement some kind of similar strategy. You know, obviously, I'm sure we've all heard our stories, but my problem with something like that is that there's no disclosure. And to me, there can be no agreement unless all parties to the agreement have been disclosed the information. I mean,
right. Is there even a copy of the agreement you can read before you open the laptop?
Yeah, I became aware of it after. It's like I said, it's actually affixed to the plastic bag. I believe it is. I'm going by memory here, but I mean, if that's even any indication to you, even to this day, I haven't gone back to the plastic bag and read this supposedly this MEULA, because to me it's just irrelevant. It's not something I need to educate myself on. It's, you know, it's not something I was made aware of as a condition or a term to using the product. It's not something I was informed about, you know, when contemplating whether or not to buy the product. It's an after the fact, as far as I'm concerned. And
the intention by the marketer is to obfuscate, and that becomes apparent with all of these shrink wrap licenses, is that the marketer tries to disguise it somehow, or hide it, or put it under some
some other title or something to basically confuse the user and convince the user to open the package and by that method automatically agree to the license terms.
Yeah, I know. I bought a laptop at Best Buy about a year and a half ago, and they actually took it out of the box and opened it up and booted it all the way up just because they're having so many problems with machines not working when they got shipped to them. So presumably they would have waived all my legal rights to it before I even received the thing.
Toshiba is a good company. My stepson has a Toshiba laptop, and it's quite nice. I'm quite impressed with it.
Yeah, but that belies the point. Doc, I don't know if you know really anything about this issue.
I know a little bit, but...
I know Don Marty has written a few articles.
He was pretty involved in the Windows Refund Day several years ago.
Yeah.
I think he was one of the guys that kind of got the whole thing rolling. Adam, were you on the cruise by any chance?
No.
No, because there was another guy
who had a
Toshiba experience he was talking about on the cruise and was... pushing. I think it was Steve Wallin, big C++ and character down in San Diego. Taught a couple of courses on the boat. I think he'd had some involvement in this too. But I know that Toshiba's been singled out for especially something or other, but not beyond that, I don't know much.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that that really amazed me when getting involved in this is just the lack of awareness that exists within these OEMs. I mean, you talk to supervisors, you talk to managers, you play the escalation game, and you figure that as you go higher up in the chain, you're going to get in touch with people that are more informed about this issue. And I'll tell you, shockingly enough, That's not the case. I mean, you talk to managers, you talk to supervisors, and the idea of somebody wanting to exercise their rights to claim, to make good on the provision that's been allocated in the license agreement, it just comes as a shock to them. That's why, going back to the question of what WindowsRefund.net is all about, that's why I feel it's important to have something that can stand in where, I guess, the Windows Refund Center started off, the intentions that obviously went behind that site, need to be in place and they need to continuously grow so that people, and including these managers, the supervisors, the policy makers, the people that make these decisions are aware that that these opinions exist. They're not going to see that by looking at a site that has had no active contributions in more than 2 years plus or something like that. So,
Adam, how many years ago was it that I think it was what, 3 or 4 years ago that this issue originally came up?
Yeah, this is a pretty dated issue. When I was again trying to arm myself, with the feedback I should be giving towards the common arguments provided by the OEMs, et cetera, et cetera. I did a lot of reading and scouring through Google and whatnot. And you're right. I mean, all of this enthusiasm and this activity, to me, it seemed like it was happening in 98 and 99, and then bang, it just shut down. Nothing.
You know where I'm going with this, though, is it just seems to me that, okay, it made a splash, and now the ripples have subsided, but maybe, things have changed now. And I think Linux has a very, very substantial foothold. And it's not just Linux. It's like, Apple is doing better these days. There's other competition too. BSDs and various other things. And that Microsoft is really, really still doing the same things they were doing 4 or 5 years ago, where try to get a laptop with Linux on it. You can't.
But see, it's not. See, I want to be really clear about something. And though I'm positive that there's a lot of people out there, especially in this community, maybe even now on IRC, that are not going to agree with the following statement. I just want to be real clear about, my position. And the point of what I'm trying to do here is not to get Linux on laptops from OEMs. I mean.
But that's not where I was going with this.
Well,
the issue here is not that we want Linux on it, but we just don't want to pay for Microsoft.
Right.
I don't
want
to use
the tax. Exactly.
And see, like I said, you still can't get Linux on a laptop. Furthermore, what's worse is you're forced to pay for Microsoft even if you don't want it.
Right. That's my point. That's why I was so shocked going into this. I mean, you know, you and I are constantly inundated with daily news about the progress, Linux on laptops, Linux in the enterprise, Linux, you know, running middleware, Linux in foreign countries, the embedded space. I mean, you know, we see growth.
Supercomputers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Et cetera, right, consolidation, I mean, et cetera. But and at the end of the day, Johnny User is still going to pay a Microsoft tax when he buys from any OEM. I mean, that's the reality. And it's so, you know, what progress are we really making? I mean,
you know, what progress did the court case make for us? I mean, what was gained there for the people who buy computers?
Well, people have to sue.
Well, I mean, yeah, this is another issue that's coming out.
Yeah, well, you're suing the deepest pockets on earth while the government stands aside.
Yeah.
So that's a little persuasive.
But, Jack, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't do it.
No, it doesn't mean you shouldn't do it.
It costs
class action suit.
You had to reduce the number of people who are willing.
Yeah, but it costs $125 to file a case in
Are we talking
court.
Small claims here?
Yeah, in Chicago. And if groups of people, you know, half a dozen people would get together and finance, you know, everybody throw in $20, finance somebody, you know, a case in Chicago, a case in L.A., it would only take a couple of cases filed around different parts of the country in different state courts for it to become a class action. And so it needs to be done. So I think you guys have done a great start by taking two cases and moving them forward.
I'm still evaluating, you know, whether or not a small claims court in my situation is going to really contribute to the bigger picture. You know, I have some opinions that say yes. I have some opinions that say no. I mean, I'm, you know, like I said, I'm really still evaluating it.
Well, but you've got precedent already. The courts have ruled in your favor already. So,
well, one of the questions that I still think of, you know, when contemplating this is I still don't even know how much money I'm fighting for. And that's not to say that this is about the money. I mean,
about $129.
Yeah, I mean, I could care less. I mean, that's lunch money. But still, I think I'd like to see it handled at a much larger level. I think a class action is appropriate
but
now.
But you're not going to get a class action until there's half a dozen Pettit suits around the country started. There has to be critical mass or a lawyer's not going to touch it. Lawyers don't do, you know, generally class action suits are done gratis. They do them for, you know, 30%, 40% of the judgment.
Of course.
And so they're not going to touch it until they see at least, you know, at least half a dozen cases in various jurisdictions around the country so that they can see that there's going to be a couple $100,000 in it because they're going to have to pay for their secretaries.
Of course.
They're going to have to pay for the paralegals. And so, you know, there's got to be a payday for them.
They have to pay for their Microsoft licenses, too. Hey, and don't forget, it's not $129. it may be $129 when you're looking at this end of the microscope. But when you're looking at the other end of the microscope, it's $129 times potentially thousands, tens of thousands,
exactly,
hundreds of thousands, and potentially millions of computers that could be running
exactly
Linux without a Microsoft license. And there lies this is the impetus for the lawyer to say, hey, it's time to move this to class action.
Right. This is probably where I should reveal the fact that, although I'm not going to speak for anybody here, obviously, I mean, that's not my role, but, you know, I am aware of a certain party that is building justification for a class action and getting the momentum going on this. And to assist with that effort, what I'm trying to do is again, you know, going back to some of the reasons for this site, I'm trying to provide this as a central point of collaboration, as a central point of organization where this, well, I guess we'll say list of people and these applicants can be represented. So when a class action is started, obviously, you know, we'd like thousands of people to or persons to be represented. Where do you get those names from? Well, hopefully, in this case, you're going to get them from WindowsRefund.net. That's the idea.
Oh. Yeah.
Well, you can tap into
the next the idea.
Well, you can tap into the Windows XP phoning the mothership on every update and just tap into that and get a whole bunch of people.
Yeah, you're going to see.
Yeah, but you don't know that those people are again using it. Yeah, no, I know.
You know you're going to see the minute a class action suit starts, you're going to see all of the Linux OEM licenses that are being bought on eBay gobbled up as fast as humanly possible. Because people are going to have to produce certs to qualify for a class action. And they're going to be like paper money. you can buy them on eBay for $67 a piece and collect $129 from Microsoft in a class action.
I think you're going to have to show them that you bought a computer with Windows. Like, for instance, I have one, two,
it would
three.
Be unreasonable to expect people to save.
I have five computers here, none of which were bought with Windows.
then you're out of luck.
Yeah, I mean, but I don't care. I don't pay the Microsoft tax because I build my computers or buy them with Linux pre-installed.
Yeah.
Two of mine had Linux pre-installed, and the other three are.
Hey, do you mind if I just comment on that for a second?
Sure.
I mean, that's come up a couple times actually over the past couple months, and I just want to comment by saying, you know, I share in that opinion. Also, when building desktop systems, I mean, I'll build a white box. I'll go out. I'll shop for my parts. I'll stick them all together. I mean, that's fine and dandy, but the laptop market is really a different beast. And personally, I don't know anybody that builds their own laptops.
That's right.
Which is probably how I found myself in this situation. Also, when talking about, you know, vendors that support Linux and hardware that ships with, you know what, I won't even say Linux. I'll just say non-Microsoft operating systems. You know, I became aware of another site. Maybe some of you have heard it, EmperorLinux.com.
Yeah,
Lincoln Drew's thing.
He does a good job.
Yeah, and I had a look, and I seriously, you know, was considering purchasing one of their products, but the simple truth is they just didn't offer the laptop that I wanted. So, you know, I've heard this opinion in the past that, you know, speak with your wallet, so to speak. Don't buy from the Dell or the HP or the Toshiba or whatever the case may be. But I just want to make a point that in that situation, you're actually limiting yourself. And I think that's really avoiding the problem. It's not solving the problem. If any of you had a chance to see the Toshiba Portage 2000, you would know exactly what I'm talking about. I mean, nobody makes hardware like this. Nobody is making a 2.6 or whatever it is pound laptop that's, you know, that's got this much power and is this portable and is just this cool. You know, so for me to restrict that or omit that and just not be able to enjoy it because of the fact that I'd have to take Microsoft on with it, I'd be punishing myself. So
don't forget, Toshiba's the outfit that made the Libretto, which is one heck of a cool machine.
The little
sub-mini laptop, which is just one cool machine.
But well, we are about up to the time. So, Kevin, do you want to sign us off for this evening?
Oh, sure. This is the Tuesday night edition of the Lake Show. We'll be back next Tuesday with another live show. So,
and thanks to Adam.
Thank you.
Thanks, Adam, and for everyone else here. Jeff, Arnie, Russ, we'll all be back next week. So we'll see you then.
All right, see you then.
Thanks.
So you need an email server, huh? Well, check out one of our sponsors. What? The Linux Show has sponsors? Yeah, well, how the hell do you think we pay the bandwidth bill around here? No, it's really more the phone bill, not the bandwidth bill. Phone bill is killing us. But anyways, back to our sponsor. Check out the folks at www.littlebluebox.com and buy their stuff and sponsor. Yes, you too can sponsor The Linux Show. Here's an example. Insert your company name here. Is a valued sponsor of The Linux Show. Here's another example. Insert your company name here. Is bringing you this special segment of The Linux Show. Now, thanks for checking us out and sponsor The Linux Show.